real life
superpowers.
If I understand that the plans I made for the first few weeks, months, or year are achievable, and I understand how can I move from one to two, not from one to 1,000. It's impossible to imagine that. Okay, but if I can imagine how do I get from 1 to 100 in a few steps, I'm sure that I will be able to move from 100 to 200, etc., etc.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Real Life Superpowers. Anders Richter is the CEO of Emmet Group, a Tel Aviv-listed services giant with 1,700 employees worldwide. A turnaround and M&A expert, he stepped into the role in October 23, just as the war broke out, and has already led three successful acquisitions. Previously, as CEO of Priority, he quadrupled the company's revenues and workforce. A former IDF Special Forces officer, Andres is also an ultramarathon runner, a volunteer in elite reserve units and with at-risk youth, and a leader who knows how to rebuild, grow, and innovate at scale. Tune in to discover what it takes to navigate challenges, drive transformation, and find strength where it matters most.
Real life
superpowers. Superpowers.
Andres, welcome to Real Life Superpowers.
Hey.
Thank you. Thank you for hosting.
So what's taking up most of your headspace these days?
I'm in my newest adventure. For the last 20 months or so, I'm a CEO of a relatively complex company called Emmet Computing, an IT service provider in the Israeli market, public company traded in Tel Aviv Stock Exchange. 1,700 employees, give or take a few, doing all there is to do in the IT business, from infrastructure to through software and digital, cybersecurity, of course, and data and AI. I joined this company October 23.
My birthday.
It's good. Not October 23rd, but October 2023, which is a date that we are all, I'm sure, it will be difficult to forget the specific month. So I'm not sure about my timing, but this is what happened. I joined the company October 23. The company itself is a company of more than 40 years. I maybe will speak about my career afterwards, but I joined this company in a very special, like, trying to do a relatively dramatic change in the company. Basically, the company, as I said, is dealing with four major things that we do, but it was managed until today, until the date I came, as a more or less as a holding company, which means not enough or nearly no cooperation between the 25 companies that are part of the group. And I'm trying to change it to generally speaking, to change a holding company to a comprehensive one, a company that will be able to serve better the customers. And of course, to improve dramatically the value of the company. So this is what takes the majority of my time, of my CPU time at least, because it's a dramatic change in the DNA of a company.
So wait, you said 25 companies, right? That's how you got it. Mm-hmm. So the 25 companies were all independent?
Yes.
Okay, so you actually took the job of trying to consolidate, mm-hmm, 25 companies, okay, to make one large company or one mother company that actually gives services as a holistic approach?
More or less, as you describe it, it is never a total consolidation of 100% of the companies. It's not like that. But basically, let's say 24 of the 25 companies, we serve the same persona in a company. Okay, we serve the CIO in terms of the C-level,
right,
figure that we answer to
the target audience.
But I'm really curious about something here. So isn't there a problem with the dynamics or the politics between other 25 companies that probably have their own CEO? And then this, you know, this Andreas guy comes over and you're like, you know, and it says, okay, I'm the boss. Like, how do you do that? The culture, on the culture aspect.
This is the most important and most difficult part. I think this is one of my superpowers, maybe. How do I deal with this type of situations? This is exactly the point, to try to change the DNA of a company that is doing, every one of the companies is doing very well. Very talented CEOs know that we're doing what they're doing. In the majority of the cases, even they were the ones who created the company and sold it to a Met Group. So we are in some places also partners, because they still own like a low percentage of the company, and right. Trying to find the right way or the right path, the right rhythm, the right reasons to cooperate and to work as one organization. This is what I'm trying to do. In my opinion, this is very valuable in terms of market, in terms of the value that we can create to our customers. And what you have just mentioned, this is the most difficult part of my job. It is politics.
They're entrepreneurs, right? Like they're entrepreneurs. So the ego, let's talk about the ego. How do we get that ego running?
So it's ego. First of all, it's not my first time.
That's what made them successful. It's not a bad thing. Ego, you know, like those are the drivers.
We all have egos, and that's part of the drivers. It's not the only driver, of course. It's not the only driver. You know, there's money, there's success, there's the feeling of being being part of something that is doing very well. A lot of forces, or you have to to consolidate into one opinion, and it takes some time. But this is what I enjoy to do. I'm not an entrepreneur as you described, or maybe I'm an entrepreneur of the next level of the company. It's not the first time I come to an organization that is doing relatively well or very well, and I'm successful in bringing it to the next level, to improving it. So it's not taking something that is not working. It's taking something that is working and trying. Or maybe first of all to take to decide or to think or to decide or take to like to commit to a value that we're going to bring. It can be growth. It can be growth in value. It can be to penetrate to new territories, etc. To make plans and to execute it. This specific case in a Met, I think that the most important muscle that I have is politics, but in a good way.
Yes. Do you mean like finding the DNA and then being the steroids?
Yes, being the steroids in a way that changes a little bit the DNA. I mean, we know that DNA it's impossible to change, but try to find the leverage in a good way, again, in a good way.
Not like a common denominator.
Exactly. To finding, you know, when all the team is aligned to one target, It's easier to join the forces and to do it better. In each and every case is different. Not all managers are the same, are in the same area. Not all of them have the same interests. And I have to admit that I do not deal with everyone the same way. And in some cases, the CEO is doing so well, and I don't want to disturb him. So I do not believe in enforcement in this level, rather convincing and finding the right angle how to attack it. And also not to solve 100% of the problems. If we each step solve 70 or 80% of the problems, we are very much in the right path. So there are cases that I leave it as it was.
And why did you join it in the first place? With the challenge, what was compelling?
Yeah, I'm a challenge guy. I enjoy challenges. I live from a project to a project. Also from my private life, I do a lot of sports. I get somewhat bored if I do not have like an impossible project in front of me. So this was what was appealing to me. I thought that the company was undervalued if I compare our company to the competitors, to the peers that we have, who are not alone in this market. And I really thought there is a room to improve the value. So I took it as a challenge. It has become, or I understood maybe when I entered the company, and you know, it takes some time to learn and to understand everything. I'm not sure I currently know everything, but I sure know much better. I understood that the management part and the personal part is very, very important here. I'm very good at strategy. I'm very good at translating strategy to plans and to act mm-hmm. accordingly. But I'm not the best technician. I'm not the best marketing guy. I'm not the best sales guy. I think, one of the best managers in terms of putting the strategy, making a certain level of plans, and making sure that the entire team works and you know, join forces to that.
We call that enabling. You're an enabler. Maybe. So, what I have a question. So I'm curious. So how did you get the first opportunity to do? Like, how did you know you were good at this? Because knowing it doesn't. It's not like you walked around when you were 16 and saying, "Oh, I have 1,000 people in this company, and it's doing well. Let's, you know, leverage it to the next situation," right? So, like, how'd you know you were good at it? Like, who gave you the first opportunity?
Listen, I'm not 16. I'm 17 by now. I didn't start as a CEO of 1,700 employees, but I am in this specific industry for more than 25 years. I started as a implementer of SAP. I don't know if you know SAP, the product. Mm-hmm. So I was an implementer, then project manager in doing SAP projects in several companies here in Israel. I worked for almost 10 years in several roles in a company called Nest Technologies. I'm sure you know.
Yes, we do.
Company as well. I was a CEO of Priority Software, if you know the company that...
Yes, I do.
We've interviewed Sagif.
Ah, yes. He came after me in Priority. So in each role I took, I think I learned something, which is something I really enjoy, learning something new even here. Even though I thought I practically know everything about this industry, I'm learning something new every day. So, you know, there are two, as for your question, as one of them is the experience that I learned along the way, starting from the
lowest. From a project manager, like implementation of projects and
yeah. So I learned. And so I know the business, I know the business motivators, I know the engine. I somewhat know the inside technology part. This is one path, which is the career path. And the other one is actually my DNA. I'm a people's guy. Everything I did along my career, from school, study, military service, I'm a people guy. I know how to motivate people. I know I'm a team player. I'm not a sole player. I'm a team player. So if you take the career professional path and my specific secret sauce, this is what led me to this position. I know experience, though, from even when I was relatively young working at Nest Technologies, I replaced places or changed roles every 2 or 3 years because I was asked to, listen, there's here and there, there's something that is not working very well. Can you join in and help us?
We're excited to be collaborating with the Israeli website CTech, owned by Kalkalist, Israel's leading business newspaper. CTech is the gateway of the Israeli high tech to the tech world and vice versa. If you're not already a regular reader, we strongly recommend that you check out calcalistech.com, C-A-L-C-A-L-I-S-T-E-C-H.com, to stay up to date on all high-impact stories from the Israeli tech scene.
I'm hearing also something, maybe I'm wrong, but you're also implementing technology to usually human resources that don't understand fully why they need it. And then you have to implement it and they have to understand it and you have to find a common denominator. And actually, because part of the problem with, you said, with SAP or with NIST, or that there's a, you know, you're closing something with, say, with the entrepreneur. Okay, this, you know, we're going to put in this new system. Then you go to that team and the team's like, okay. And it's more of a hassle for them to change anything. So you have to demystify that and also make them, you know, do it. And that's superpower, or that capability is very unique, because, you know, like, you have to understand that even if it's in a great technology, the hardest part about implementation is changing the way they think of it from a hassle to actually something that they gain. Am I correct?
First of all, it's a new angle for me. I think you're right. I never thought about it in this way, but you are definitely right. Also, implementation of software or new technology is change management, no doubt. I never thought that even at my first steps of my career, I did something like this, which involved...
It's very hard. It's very difficult. Like, anything from M&As and implement technology, at the end of the day, you know, I call it the deal killers. You know, like, everybody is, again, it's more work. It's harder. It's changes. They don't understand the value. You know, it's long-term marathon, you know, so it's a very difficult position. So whoever's successful in implementation, at the end, that's customer service and that's retention. So like, I can totally get how, if you keep on doing that, and especially change each time, by the way, which is even harder, because you just get the challenge from the beginning. It's like 1 to 10, 1 to 10, 1.
Yeah, you're right. Never thought about it. There's the connection between the two, but you're 100% right. And it, you know, it relates to my character. I'm a freak of change. I get bored if I'm doing the same things over and over again, I have to admit. So I enjoy the change. I think that persons, companies, organizations in general have to keep changing. And who does not change, you know, it stays in behind. You know, it's almost like a common knowledge. But I really think that it's something we should do. And this was part of the reasons I came here, because I thought, again, coming back to Emet, it is a relatively successful company, big company, a lot of employees, a great top line, etc. But I think that there is a change that we need to have a change here, and this is what I came to do.
So I have to ask you then, because you're the puzzles guy and you're the change guy, how come you've never created something of your own?
First thing I did, I had a startup of my own, a fintech small thing. I think that it is not dead yet, but it's not alive. It's a good question.
Really? It's not dead yet, but it's not alive, because there's that voice inside of you that is dreaming of one day reviving it?
I don't think that this specific solution will be alive. It's a good question. It's a good question.
But didn't you say, again, these are your words, right? You said you're not a sole player, you're a team player. There's something very lonely, as I'm telling you, as an entrepreneur. There's a beginning to start where, at the end of the day, you know, the first X amount of time, you're mostly meeting people that say no and you're alone. No. So, like, if you like team playing, then, you know, it takes a while to get a team. Yeah, you know what I mean? Is that a reason?
Maybe a reason. First of all, I tried the startup or the entrepreneurship. I think that when I was in my late 40s, I would say, or 50s. So I'm currently 56, so less than 10 years ago.
Well, wait, let's talk about that then, because...
Too late. It was too late for me.
No, I would never be that voice, but I'm curious why you are echoing that. And I'm also curious... What made you take that leap? because you were in the army, and then you did go corporate, and then suddenly at midlife, right? Some would say you decide I'm gonna give it a shot, but then you pause. Like, what happened?
Timing. I got this opportunity here. Maybe a poor choice of partner. I wasn't alone. I was with a partner, and I'm not sure that we are a good match.
Compatible.
Yeah. So, but it was like a romantic adventure. Someone when I was younger said that I'm an entrepreneur in a
intrapreneur.
Yeah, within a frame, but not from
nothing
to something. I think I'm creative. I have the ability to. You mentioned marathons, so I did more than 20. So I know long running. Okay.
Right. Were you in sports?
Just to finish the sentence, but I think I'm better in when the team is bigger, when I lead the team that is bigger and not doing everything by myself, which is at the beginning of the startup industry, do it by yourself. I'm not afraid of receiving no. I received a lot of no's in my career, but you're maybe more alone in small organization.
But you're also alone when you do a marathon, and you love that. Like, you're not afraid to get uncomfortable or alone.
Yeah, no, but I'm not. You're right that at the end of the day, you do a marathon or ultra alone on your own feet. You don't have help. But training is in a team. We do usually in the last years I do it with a team, so it's not.
It's a different kind of alone. Like what I mean with alone is this: it's like difference between being an enabler. When you're an entrepreneur, you're more like a visionary. You know what I mean? Like, you're alone in a sense that you have this vision that you're trying to, this dream that you're trying to pursue, which other people, it's not as their dream. It's maybe their goals. And when you're in a position as an enabler, you have a common goal. So, you know what I mean? Like, there's something about, I don't know, it's a guess. Were you in sports, by the way, when you were younger?
Yeah, but
I was... Competitive?
Yes, a sprinter, not a long runner. Sprinter. Uh-huh. Yeah.
As what age?
Before military service, I mean, 16, 17. I was quite good at that, the 100 meter, 200 meters, and relay. And then the army, so you stop doing this type of sport and do something else. And I rode bikes a lot of a few years until I had an accident and couldn't hold like the bar. So I started running and got addicted to long running, trail running, marathons, ultra, multi-days. As I described, I travel or hike by running. And, yeah.
How much do you feel like the skills that you're getting from all these... very difficult sports that really stretch you to meet new edges of your personality? And I know it could be a cliche, because obviously the answer is yes, it's a skill set that I take with me to work. But is it, like, do you feel it in your day-to-day, the difference?
Yes, I'll tell you. First of all, yes, it's a cliche, but some cliches are right. So yes, but usually when people speak about sports and business or management, so they speak about the effort or the long-term effort that you have to invest, and sometimes also to fall and to pick yourself up after like a crisis or something, and the persistence needed in business. I want to add to that making plans. Two years ago, I attended to an event, a sport event in Costa Rica, 6 days, totaling 240 kilometers, 10,000 meters incline and decline.
You know you're crazy, right?
Crazy event. Also crazy. I truly believe that it's a crazy event. I'm very glad I did it. I'm quite sure I will not do it again. But what I'm trying to say, I wasn't the crazy behind this idea. We are a company of three friends that we run a lot together, both in Israel and abroad, did a lot of marathons together. And one of the three, not me, was crazy enough to suggest this event. So we had a beer and said, listen, it's my dream for years to do this specific event. It is called the Coastal Challenge, the Costa Rica Challenge. Really crazy event. So me, being me, I said, listen, before I say yes, I need 24 hours to make plans. I took it home, did an Excel file, and thought, okay, if we have to run 240 kilometers, how will the training be? Can it be pressed into, we're like 7 months before this event? Can it be done in terms of plans? Taking into account that we have holidays and here and there, maybe you'll be sick, etc. I was able to create a plan that was reasonable. I sent it to the team and I said, yeah, let's go. This is the plan. Okay. So as to your question about the connection between sports and management or business, I think this is also a part. There are people that can come up for sit up, stand up from a couch and do a marathon. I'm not like this. I'm not the fastest. I'm not the thinnest. I'm not the youngest. I'm not. Everyone can do it. If you have a plan and you stick to the plan and you understand that you can move, 10, 15% right or left of the plan. But if you have a plan and it's sufficient time, everything is doable. And this is something that I truly believe.
And it's an impossible plan. Yeah, which is important.
It seems like an impossible. Listen, we spoke about priority, the job that I did before. When I started, I took a commitment to quadruply the company, to have it like four times bigger. And I took I committed to do it within 4 years. Okay, I was late. I did it after 5 years, but I did it five times bigger. When I presented the plan to the team, they thought I was crazy. Some people told me, listen, you are crazy. And some people did not say it, but I'm sure they thought. But we made some plans and we took some, high-level sentences. What are you going to do with the product? How do we tackle abroad? What are we going to do with growth, etc.? And each of the headlines, we continue to develop it to plans and then acted according to the plans more or less. And after 4 or 5 years, in my case, we were there. Okay. The same thing I did here. I thought, okay, let's try and double the value of the company. What are the areas that we want to focus in order to achieve these goals? Growth and branding and outside of Israel, and how do we work together? How do we find the right synergy? Again, synergy can be a cliche, but how do we find the value about synergy? And each headline was developed to lower level headlines and according to plans, and not everything will be achievable in the first year or second year, but we are working with a kind of a plan that is much detailed for the things that we're going to achieve this year, less details for the things we want to achieve the year after and the year after. And this is how I think and how I work. And this is very similar to having a marathon plan for someone. This is his first time for him.
So you approach a project and you sort of sit down with yourself. And it seems like you're trying to think, how far can I stretch this in a way that I'm accountable for? So I say it to the world. Nobody, no board of directors, nobody's coming to me directly and saying, hey, let's quadruple the company. It's coming from you. Now you have to succeed. So you always have to somehow balance internal stress and keep it engaging for yourself and not painful, too painful, like that you can't even breathe. But you're putting yourself in this situation. You're completely building it. Now I can understand the concept where you love being the Mr. Impossible guy. You love being the one that the recruiters, the people will say, hey, we need to bring him if we want to do the impossible. But where is your line? Because it seems like you're stretching. How much are you calculated within the impossible moonshot goals that you're making a reality? And how much is this like a, Yeah, worst case, I'll fail.
So the older I get, I'm less worried about failing because I know I can fail. I failed. It's not that I'm 100% successful. So I think that the older I am, maybe the experience, maybe the knowledge that not everything is working like your plan. I'm less afraid of failing, but again, I do the plan to make sure that the impossible is possible. Okay, this is exactly the example I gave you with this ultramarathon thing that we did, because you know the other two let's do it. Having a few beers, and I told them, "Listen, of course I'm on, but let me give me 24 hours to make a plan. If we can create a plan that we understand even the steps of the plan closer to this specific event, I'm not sure I will get there. But if I understand that the plans I made for the first few weeks, months, or year are achievable." And I understand how can I move from one to two, not from one to 1,000. It's impossible to imagine that. Okay, but if I can imagine how do I get from 1 to 100 in a few steps, I'm sure that I will be able to move from 100 to 200, et cetera, et cetera. So the closer the plans are to this current point, I have to be more sure that I'm capable of doing it. And I trust the experience, the instinct, the effort, the joint effort of the team, that you can, when time comes, you can do the specific plan for the next level. So
I'll tell you why I find this fascinating, because when you told us about that event that you ended up participating in, what I told you was you're crazy. And you were saying that the response that you got when you said you're going to quadruple the company. And I think there's something very logical about your mindset where you look at a situation and you're able to define your own goal, even if it's one that most people will say crazy, because if you're able to figure out, because I don't think the word here is even a plan. I think it's about you being able to understand, is this doable for me? And I think you have your own set of rules for what's doable for you, and you sort of silence out everything else. And then what would seem crazy to almost everybody, like you said in priority, right? You said everybody, the people that said something said I'm crazy, and the people that didn't thought it probably. So that's your premise. You're saying my premise is I'm going to do something that everybody else thinks is impossible. And I think that is fascinating because I think that's somehow something that people can replicate, because you are identifying something methodic where people see a gap that is impossible. A, you know how to pinpoint that point in the future that you want to get to. If it's that event, then that was a given. So you had to reverse engineer and ask yourself smart questions. But in business, you're looking at an equation and you're deciding what it's supposed to equal, and you know how to ask specific questions where everybody else is apparently, not to dismiss anybody, but there's something blind about most people where you see a way forward that is actionable. So my question here is, what is it that you see that enables you to set those goals where people are much more moderate?
First of all, it's a good question. I am not sure I have a specific answer, but I have a few comments about it. I think some people, maybe when they stay too much in the same position, or maybe they get used to what they're doing, do not see the obstacle as something that you cannot pass or is very difficult to pass. The change management, going back to the change management that we spoke before, also it's an obstacle. The change management, not all people I know are looking for changes and looking for doing something new every now and then. This is a skill, and this is what I enjoy. I enjoy doing new things every year or two, also in my personal life. So I think that first of all, it comes from a character that I have, that I want to do new things. I do carpentry, I like work with
carpeting.
Work with woods as one of my hobbies, for instance. And sometimes, you know, I build something, a bench or something, and someone from the family said, well, listen, can you build also one for me? I usually do not do it because I do not enjoy doing it again. I enjoy doing like new things. So first of all, I think it's maybe the difference between me and maybe some of the people. I enjoy doing new things, and I get bored doing the same things over and over again. This is one part. And maybe I'm a bit more creative, or I'm trying to find like new angles to look at problems. I'm not sure I'm the most intelligent guy in the room or most, I don't know what, but I have maybe the ability to look at the things in a different angles and not to be afraid to commit to a target.
But why did everybody else think quadrupling is crazy? What did you see there? And I don't mean in the details, but as a concept. What did you see there that made it clear to you? Because you wouldn't take it on, obviously, if you thought it was crazy to the point of impossible.
Yeah, so I'm not sure. I don't know because I'm not sure that I saw at the beginning that I can do four times bigger. I'm not sure.
So you just said it?
But I did. No, I said it, but I don't.
Why did you say it?
No, because I believed I could do it.
Why the number? Why quadruple? Like, did you see something completely underperforming? You identified opportunities?
I'll tell you. No, it is a great company. It is a great product. I saw it was very stagnant. I saw that there is a potential if we do the things a bit different, if we modernize a little bit the company. I think that the people were very talented there, but it was a stagnant company. It was a stagnant company. And I was trying to achieve something very, very big for myself. I was recruited by the private equity, So I know their plans. I know the ambitions of a private equity or to do this type of numbers. So I aligned to this business. But
oh, so was there a previous conversation where they told you, hey, we'd love to?
Yes, but we didn't discuss numbers. But yes, we know the business model of private equities. We are also today, Ahmed, is although a private, a publicly traded company, but the control group is a private equity as well. Right. Yes. So we know the business model. We know that we have to prove dramatically the value. So
I'm sort of wondering if, like in the event example, if in a sense what you're unconsciously doing is when you enter a new puzzle, right? It's all about the puzzles for you. You enter a new puzzle. Do you try to look at the current pieces and then ask yourself, okay, what can I truly do with this? What do I identify here and what do I truly do with this? Or is it more like, okay, let me throw something as far away as I can and then challenge myself and through that? No, actually, I'm saying it and I don't believe that, because it's the same. You didn't go to that event until you knew you had a plan. So I believe when you said you're going to quadruple it, that there was much thought behind it.
There was much thought, but not every piece of the puzzle I knew how to achieve it. So it's a mixture of the two attitudes.
But you had enough experience also, like in the backlash of projects. There's 25 companies. He has experience in them. But I thought was it wasn't a plan on the surface. I think what I heard is it's a plan. Is if he can consolidate all of these companies working in aligned goals instead of everybody working independently, everybody's going to achieve more because then one is going to give, you know, the clients to one another. So it wasn't a specific goal; it's more like a culture goal. Am I correct?
That's for the current Emmett, right? But I was asking you about quadrupling priority, but I guess the same logic applies.
Yeah. So I didn't commit to quadruply this company. I think it's not the same situation. It's a different company, different size, a different line of business. One is a product company. We are a service company. So here I didn't commit to do it four times bigger. So it's not, I'm not reckless in in the commitment.
You're not reckless, but you are the Mr. Impossible that they bring in.
I enjoy this challenge to achieving something impossible. Yes, this I have to admit that I enjoy. Enjoy also along the way, although it's stressful. I work hard. We stretch the people. Sometimes we have to replace the team because not all team members are on the same page in that target or amount of effort needed or belief that we can achieve it. So it is energy consuming. It's not...
So let's talk about that for a minute, because you are accountable to so many. And I will factor in 1,700 people within that equation for sure. And then then you enter a puzzle and you say, hey, this is what I'm going to figure out. And I'm the captain of the ship. I'm going to bring this ship to this destination. And along the way, there are storms and there are issues. And there are probably times where you're also taken back. And actually, my question too is, How do you manage that mentally?
First of all, I take it very seriously, the 1,700 families, specifically October 23, I remind you, that the first thing I did was just to make sure that everyone is alive, how many of the teams are recruited to the army. So definitely... we take it very seriously. Also, being a public company, we are responsible for the shareholders. So again, I think that I am a bit different here than in previous organizations, because this is bigger than what I did before. This is the first publicly traded company that I'm CEO of. So a lot of new things. Also, I did not manage a lot of CEOs until now. I was a sole CEO, let's say, putting aside a few, because also in priority we did some acquisitions, but it was something else. Here, I am manager of CEOs. So I do the things here slower.
You also, because it's a public company, you're not able to go give all these moonshot goals, because then you'll be blamed of manipulating stock.
No, that's, of course not. Yes, you're right. So I do the things in a different way, but I think that the powers, the motivation is the same. Also, I have to say, because I manage a lot of CEOs that are very capable and knowledgeable in their specific area, I'm less involved in the specific business and less involved in the day-to-day activity with the employees. When the people want to raise, they do not come to me. Okay, so I'm managing today in a different level, much more strategy, much more enabling today than execution when I was a previous CEO, doing it easier because of the politics, also doing a lot of effort in that area, pushing but not pushing too hard, or pulling but not pulling too hard, because I believe I have to pull, not to push. So it's a different kind of management today.
But for you, how do you manage the stress of this?
By sport, it's a mental thing to have a lot of sport. To go running four times a week or whatever, or swimming or whatever, it's not only physical, it's also mental. But I enjoy it. It's for me, it's more difficult to be like in a plateau, in doing the same over and over. I had a few in my career. I had a few, like I call it stops, that I did some consultancy, some helping other companies. It was great for a break. It was excellent for stress, but also I was lacking the glory. So the evidence is that I came back from this stop periods and entered again, took like challenges for myself. So it's a matter of character. I enjoy this type of things. Although while the training is going on, or while in the process, sometimes you get frustrated, very stressed, etc. So it's not happy all day, no. But I really, really, if I try to put it in one sentence, I really enjoy looking back and say, listen, I started here, look where I am. This is moments of joy for me. Okay.
So that's a great point. So the sports part, we're going back to that each time. We have a theory here on our podcast about sports. Yeah. So anybody, like, I always loved in my businesses to hire people that were ex-athletes. And the reason for that is there's something about that, that in a young age, when you implement that characteristic, you understand that they know how to work with the team. They know how to work with rules. They know how that if they train and they work persistently and hard, they'll get better and they may have a chance, especially if they won something, then they know they can get better and actually win. And they know that.
And also how to lose.
They also know how, not all of them, but they do know that that there is a price to pay for also achievements, that they have to go to sleep earlier, or they have to have a plan, or they have to eat what they have to eat. So they know how to pay a price to get to that achievement. And those ethics, okay, for that is something that is a very big driver. We see with a lot of, this is, I think Noah said, our 89th episode, is a lot of the more successful entrepreneurs and enablers are people who either have that in their life or have that as an infrastructure, okay? Because that has a lot to do with also knowing to achieve goals. Like, if you think about it, you're either an entrepreneur that achieved the goal and then you have that confidence, or you achieved it in sport or something that you even know that you can have the capability or potential to quadruple anything, right? Mm-hmm. So in that sense, when you say the project doing the same thing, right, on the achievement side, it really aligns with you saying, and you said this, as a sprinter, I was pretty good. Okay, so mm-hmm. it really aligns that there's a reason you're a sprinter. I'm sure you're not from, like, we're now on the podcast, so I see him. You're not from, you know, Ethiopia or some, you know, or from a country actually that is actually Jamaica, right? I'm sure that Bolt wasn't your coach. Right. So no. At the end of the day, there has to be that that and implementing that actually ethics inside a culture. OK, and being the coach of that, I'm sure that had a lot to do with it. By the way, parents, are they in sports?
Not really. I mean, a bit. My late father did some sport. My mother did. Actually, maybe she was young. Yes. But you know, it's not there. I my kids are more in sports because of me, but I wasn't raised in that kind of a house. But I have to say that I was raised in a home that I don't want to say that it's like an achieve that everything have to be achieved or so. But it was a thing to invest the effort, do your best. Okay,
right.
Let's put it
right, right, best, right, right. I understand.
Don't leave the potential on the table.
Okay. I understand. It also means, in a good way, it means we believe in you.
Yeah, no, definitely. No complaints about home. No complaints at all. My both parents were very successful in their areas. But yes, I was raised in a home doing, don't leave a potential on the table. Do mm-hmm. your best. Yeah. So this is something I took, and I think I give both to the employees and to my kids. Don't leave the potential on the table. Do your best.
An enabler.
Yeah, maybe.
And tell me, what do you think, what is your superpower?
I if I can choose two.
yes, you can.
So one of them is that we said, it's like dismantling a bomb, how would you say, a mine, okay? Mm-hmm. So taking like something that seems achievable.
Mindset.
Yeah, it seems maybe impossible. And trying to dismantle it and to make a plan that is achievable.
To ground it.
Yeah, to ground it. Maybe it's a good expression. And the other one has to be the ability to work with people. I think that I'm a leader in a specific way. Without enforcing, without like being an army type of leader. But to understand the motivations of people, I enjoy between me and me, as I say, I enjoy sometimes that ideas that I hear from employees or boards are ideas that I put in their mind a few months before, that the first response was, nah, and after a few months, let's do it, let's do that. So I truly believe that I can influence in a good way the people work with me.
Helping them be better.
Yeah.
And learning about themselves now that they can.
Yeah. I have to say that people, we speak about Perotti, maybe too much, but I even recently received a phone call from one employee of Perotti telling me, listen, you remember that you taught me this and this and this, and it doesn't involve the work at all, but something like personal, that you have to learn something new every few years. So I got the phone call, listen, I remember, I still remember what you have said, just to let you know that I learned this and this and this.
Priceless.
Yeah, it's priceless for me that I am successful in influencing and helping other people. So I have to say that I believe that these are my two superpowers.
And your weakness?
We need another hour for that.
Give us one.
I think I mentioned this as well. I get bored doing the same.
I knew you'd say that. It's because it's the opposite of your superpower.
Yeah, I enjoy vacations, doing nothing, but not long vacations like this. I have to say, I'm very good at home. I enjoy, making order in the garage or in there, but I'm pretty bad at keeping the order as it is. So every now and then I take everything out, arrange it again, and it takes time. So in maintenance, I'm not that good.
I would, in my guess, I would give you two different superpowers, by the way. May I?
Yes, of course.
So one, yeah, Albert Einstein always said that creativity is intelligence having fun. Okay? and I feel that creativity is one of your superpowers. Because it's also, you're talking about boredom a lot. So you want the intelligence to have fun all the time, to be creative. So it's creative thinking. I would say that. And on the people side, I would call it actually empathy, because it sounds to me that you have a sense of how to get into other people's mindsets and shoes. So your empathy level is very high. So they call it EQ, but for me, empathy is the better, is the holy grail of EQ. Meaning it's so between the creativity and the empathy, that would also explain your weaknesses as well.
I might take your suggestion. And
maybe next. If you don't, then like you don't have to pay for it either, so it's fine.
Good.
And let's say we talk in another year, which we hope we do. Okay, mm-hmm. What would be a great achievement for you? Okay, it could be. By the way, you don't have to make it work. It could be personal. It could be a career. It could be spiritually.
So listen, it working is very simple. We have KPIs, so it's a relatively easy to judge. If we will make a substantial increase in value, if we do some incremental business in outside of Israel, I think it would be a success. And in personal life, have three kids. Two of them were officers in the last few years, got out of the army a few months ago. And my younger daughter is now currently in the army. So everyone of the kids are building their life. So as long as they're happy, taking advantage of their potential, I'm happy for them as well. So it's... I have to put this also as one of the points for the next
nice.
Year.
And last question.
Yes.
Okay. If I worked with you and I met you in another 10 years, what would be the best thing that you heard be said to you? Meaning, what would you wish for people to say about the experience working with you?
He's a great guy to work with, right.
And I'm sure they do. That's already happening. Thank you so much.
I'm sure they do, yeah. Thank you very much. It was very interesting.
Thank you very much.
Some surprising angles for me as well. So I enjoyed as
we tried.
Learning something new every day.
So. We need good DNA like yours to be the steroids. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please consider subscribing to our podcast so you never miss an episode. Also, if you have a moment, we would really appreciate it if you could rate and review our podcast on the platform you're listening to. This will help others find our show. And as always, if you know anyone who you think would enjoy our podcast, please share it with them. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back as usual on the first of the month.
Real. Live.
Superpowers.
Live.
Superpowers.